Earth's sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, your weekly mix of science and music from Austin, Texas. I'm Michael Brennan. This week, asteroid 2012 DA14 does a close flyby, and we'll talk to Deborah Bird about that. NASA launches its Landsat data continuity mission, and songs by Tao and the Get Down Stay Down. Here's your scientist soundbite.
There are these objects out there, and astronomers are watching for them. This object will be passing near us on February 15th, 2013.
That's Deborah Bird, talking about asteroid 2012 DA14. More with her in a few. But first, Song of the Week is by Tao and the Get Down, Stay Down. The track is called We the Common, and it's off their new album, released this week.
If I burn my youth, would it come to me? Oh, love, won't you bat my eye? I miss the sweet garden man, baffle a skeleton dry. All they wanted was a villain, and all they had was me. All they wanted was a villain, so then they just took me. Hold my county line, get down on my city floor. Skeleton dry. All they wanted was a villain, and all they had was me. All they wanted was a villain, so then they just took me. Hold my county line, get down on my city floor.
That was We the Common by Tao and the Get Down Stay Down on their album out this week. You're listening to Earth Sky 22. You can find us as Earth Sky on Facebook, Earth Sky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Deborah Bird is in the studio now to talk about asteroid 2012 DA14. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi, Mike. So if you haven't heard of this asteroid yet, you must be living on the moon because there's so many people talking about this asteroid. So it's interesting because this asteroid is probably one of millions of asteroids that have passed close to Earth in our 4.5 billion year history. But what's new now is that astronomers are watching for asteroids like this. So when one passes particularly close to us, we know about it in advance. And that's the case here.
And so they just put a name. They just discovered this asteroid in 2012, but it's been out there probably for eons.
4.5 billion years, just like us. Yeah, this asteroid's part of our solar system, and all the things in the solar system, you know, formed at about the same time. So the thing about this asteroid is that it has an orbit that's somewhat similar to Earth's. So it's considered a near-Earth asteroid, and it's passed near us many times. But, you know, as I said, now astronomers in the past few decades have gotten more and more serious about watching for asteroids, near-Earth asteroids. And we know, for example, that asteroids do sometimes strike the Earth. For example, Meteor Crater, which is a huge crater that's carved into the ground near, it's east of Flagstaff, Arizona. Very cool place to visit, especially with kids. And that was caused by an object that struck the Earth 50,000 years ago. More recently, we have the Tunguska event in 1908, and that too is an example of an object that it's usually described as a small comet, not an asteroid, thought to have exploded in the atmosphere and flattened forest and killed reindeer in Siberia. So asteroid 2012 DA14 is not alone. It's not unusual that there are these objects out there, and astronomers are watching for them. This object will be passing near us on February 15th, 2013.
And there's no chance of Earth impact?
NASA is saying that there is absolutely no chance of an Earth impact. But this object is getting very, very close. In fact, it's getting closer than geosynchronous satellites. So most satellites orbit just a few hundred miles up, but we have this special kind of satellite called a geosynchronous satellite, and also some communication satellites mm-hmm. that are orbiting about 26,000 miles up. So they're orbiting much higher up than ordinary satellites. And this particular asteroid, 2012 DA14, is going to pass 17,200 miles from Earth. So it's coming within the orbit of those geosynchronous satellites.
Wow. So any chance it would hit one of those satellites?
You know, people, I think, don't realize how vast space is. Space is really big. So, wow, if it hit one of those satellites, that would be surprising. That would be very surprising. It's not very crowded up there at that height above the Earth.
So how big is this asteroid?
The asteroid's size isn't known very precisely. It's thought to be maybe 45 meters across, which is about 150 feet across. So the size of this object, if it hit us, it wouldn't destroy the planet, like it wouldn't break the planet into pieces mm-hmm. or anything like that. People are comparing it to the Tunguska event, which I mentioned. And again, that Tunguska event in 1908, something happened in Siberia. It happened in a remote location, and it took scientists a long time to figure out actually what had happened there because there were, you know, very few people on the ground there. But they know that in 1908, something happened to flatten. There was a big explosion, and something happened to flatten many miles of forest in Siberia and to kill the reindeer that were in that forest. And so nowadays people say it's a small comet. 2012 DA14 is thought to be on the order of that event. So if 2012 DA14 were to hit in Siberia, it would again flatten, you know, miles of forest and kill reindeer. Of course, you don't know where it's going to hit. So if it happened to hit on a city, it could flatten a city. And that's very, very sobering. Most of Earth is water, so chances are it would go into the water. But, you know, tsunamis, that sort of destruction. So, you know, it wouldn't be a good thing if it hit us. It would be a bad thing. But again, it's not going to hit us. It's not going to hit us on February 15th, 2013. It's going to pass within 17,200 miles of Earth, closer than the moon, closer than geosynchronous satellites, probably won't hit any satellites, probably definitely won't hit the moon. And, you know, that it's just something to really sort of, you know, think about. And
yeah, that seems pretty close. Is there any chance in future years that we're going to have an even closer encounter with this asteroid?
At first, astronomers thought that there was a possibility that it might hit us in the year 2020. But as they tracked the orbit of this object more thoroughly and got, you know, more data points in terms of, mm-hmm. you know, what its orbit looks like, they've ruled out that possibility. So at this point, there are no known instances where this object will strike us. Of course, there are many, many objects, as I said, out in space that are passing near us. It seems like, you know, every couple of months, it seems like we're talking about an object, not that comes as close as this object does, mm-hmm. but every couple of months, it seems like, or more often, it seems like we're talking on the website about some object, some asteroid or other that's coming somewhat close. So, you know, there are lots of these objects out there, and astronomers are watching for them. They're trying to find them all, track their orbits, find out if indeed one might be on a collision course with Earth. They say that it would take a couple of years to mount a spacecraft expedition to encounter an asteroid that would be on a collision course with Earth. And people ask that all the time. They say, well, couldn't we just, if we knew about it, couldn't we just, you know, go up there with a spacecraft and do the Bruce Willis thing and, you know, send it off course or blow it up into pieces or something like that? And the answer is, yeah, if we thought that one was on a collision course with Earth, I'm sure that we would try that. Would we have enough time to mount that expedition and to get that spacecraft up there? That's the question. So, you know, they're trying to find out. This is if you ever have a chance to ask your congressperson about this funding for this type of thing, hey, I would vote yes. Let's keep funding this because, you know, it's definitely something that in my mind is something we should keep an eye on. But there's nothing that's going to be happening on February 15th.
Okay. Are we going to be able to see anything here, standing on Earth here?
No, we're not even going to be able to see it. It's just going to sweep past. And when I say us, I mean those of us who don't have telescopes. Now, astronomers that do have telescopes will be watching this object. It's just under the limit of visibility to the eye. So it'll definitely be visible through telescopes and binoculars, and people who have charts and so on and who are familiar with looking at the sky will be able to see it. In fact, there's going to be a really cool event where shortly after it's closest to Earth, it's thought that it'll pass into Earth's shadow for a while. So what that means is that, of course, the asteroid is shining with reflected sunlight, just as the Earth and the Moon are shining with reflected sunlight. It's not really emitting any light of its own. So when it passes into Earth's shadow, it'll suddenly go dark, and it'll be dark for something like 18 minutes, and then it'll suddenly, you know, come out of the shadow and reappear again. So definitely amateur astronomers who have telescopes and who are used to looking for events like that will be watching for that. It might be that if there's an astronomy club in your location, it would be a good time to check with them to see if they're going to have any kind of viewing party or something like that. You know, check it out. See if there's some way that you can see it. Other than that, I would say just watch for the videos and watch for the photos that are sure to come out of this event, because surely astronomers will be taking pictures.
Yeah, we'll have them on earthsky.org.
We definitely will.
All right, thanks a lot, Deborah.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
We're EarthSky, a clear voice for science. The Landsat series of Earth-observing satellites have had a satellite in orbit since 1972, and they'll continue the mission this week with the launch of the latest, most technically advanced Landsat satellite yet, the Landsat Data Continuity Mission, or LDCM. The launch will take place in California on February 11th. Watch the launch live at landsat.usgs.gov and join the online launch party by following USGS Landsat or NASA_Landsat on Twitter. EarthSky's Jorge Salazar spoke with several scientists about how they've used Landsat data over the years. Here's satellite researcher Curtis Woodcock.
The Landsat series of satellites has been absolutely fantastic, and this historical archive is really the key to understanding how forests are changing, because even though a lot of the imagery is yet to be analyzed or studied, it's available because it was collected. Somebody had the foresight in the past to collect global data that we can use now in the present time.
And this data, you say, has been collected since 1972, and it's still important for scientists now.
Oh, extremely important. I would argue that that archive of data that, in essence, is a record of what's happened on the surface of the Earth may be the most valuable environmental data record that we have.
Here's NASA glaciologist Robert Binshadler speaking about Landsat images taken from space of Antarctica, arranged in a full-color, high-definition mosaic.
This view of Antarctica from space, where you could see just gorgeous shades of blue and white and deep blue ocean, it was stunning.
Now, I'd like to speak with you about the Landsat image mosaic of Antarctica. LIMA shows an amazingly detailed view of the entire frozen continent. How would you describe LIMA?
Well, the way I would describe LIMA is that it is the first true color, high definition view of Antarctica.
Tell us more about some of the science that is contained in this.
Well, one of the most fascinating pieces of science that has been done with LIMA so far, in my opinion, was one that was totally unexpected. And this was one where they used the fact that it is in true color to assess where the penguin colonies, where the rookeries, where penguins live, are located. And the way they did it was there's a unique spectral signature, a certain color to the guano, the penguin poo, if you will, that's deposited on the ice. So the fact that that LIMA provided them true color and high resolution allowed them to assess where penguins were nesting and where they were not.
Maybe you could give us a big picture here of what was gained in doing this and why it's different than what scientists knew before this Landsat image mosaic of Antarctica was put together.
Well, I think the fact that it gives scientists an early view of any area of the continent. It's a huge continent, and most of it still remains unexplored in any sort of detail. So if you're a geologist wanting to explore a particular mountain range, you're going to want to look at that mountain range before you go. And then it also shows, because it's in such high detail, particular features on the surface that a glaciologist such as myself can interpret to tell us about the ice sheet, where it's going fast, where it's going slow, which direction it's going. So there's just a variety of ways that such a unique data set can be used by scientists. I can't remember who it was that said, you know, a good picture is worth 1,000 words. It's true that in order to communicate our science, Landsat has a unique place that we can show people what's happening. We can see cities expand. In the polar regions, we can see these changes where nobody is even around to observe them. And for studying changes on this Earth and being able to interpret the causes of those changes, you want as long a time record as possible. And so Landsat has provided that.
Research scientist Martha Anderson speaking with Jorge Salazar about using Landsat to monitor water usage from space.
We know that fresh water availability is going to become an increasingly critical issue worldwide. So we really have to be able to map water use at the scale that water is being used. And Landsat really is the only satellite system currently operating that can provide us routinely and globally thermal information at this critical spatial scale.
How does Landsat, in orbit around Earth, see how water is being used on an agricultural field?
Well, Landsat has a number of imaging systems, and one of them collects radiation that is in the thermal wave band. Those are wavelengths that are longer than our eyes can see. All objects emit this kind of thermal radiation. The hotter the object, the stronger the thermal emission. So using these thermal wave band systems, we can map out the temperature of the land surface remotely. With Landsat, we can do this mapping at fine enough spatial resolution that we can detect temperature differences between different fields, agricultural fields, and this is very useful. Crops that are evaporating water with very high rate of ET tend to be cooler because the evaporation is cooling down the surface.
How is the water use information that Landsat collects being used?
It really is being used operationally now, and particularly in the western states where kind of water resources are getting increasingly tight and they're being depleted sometimes at an unsustainable rate. So in Idaho, for example, the water resource managers in the water management districts are using Landsat ET to see if individual irrigators in the irrigation districts are complying with their allocated water rights, or if they're using more water than they should be. And they can tell that by looking at time sequences of Landsat ET data. Farmers can use this information also to figure out which fields need to be irrigated and by how much they need to be irrigated. We can also study kind of the trade-offs in water use between different users. For example, in some parts of the West, you have irrigation occurring next to a stream that's supporting some important habitat, salmon spawning grounds, for example. We can use the Landsat ET to see how much the irrigated agriculture may be influencing the stream flow in these critical ecosystems.
Landsat's 40-year legacy continues on February 11th, 2013, as the Landsat Data Continuity Mission, or LDCM, prepares for launch. Here's Jim Irons, principal scientist, talking about LDCM.
The LDCM will extend and improve upon the Landsat record of landscape change. The resulting observations and information will be critical to managing increasing demands on land resources and preparing for inevitable changes to the global land surface. LDCM will be the best Landsat satellite launched to date, the best Landsat satellite ever, in terms of the quality and quantity of the data collected by the LDCM sensors. I do not think it hyperbole to suggest that all 7 billion of us will benefit from the results of the Landsat Data Continuity Mission.
Landsat Data Continuity Mission, set for launch February 11th. Watch the launch live at nasa.gov. And that's our show. Thanks for joining us. This week's show was recorded in EarthSky Studio in Austin, Texas. For more information about the music or the science you heard, visit earthsky.org. I'm Michael Brennan. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next stage. There are so many artists, too much art, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next stage.